Off the Ball.
In association with Air. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the Air Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
Now, over the last year, US gymnastics has been rocked by allegations of sexual abuse against one of its leading doctors. Yesterday, Dr. Larry Nassar, a former team doctor for USA Gymnastics and Michigan State, pleaded guilty to 7 counts of criminal sexual conduct and admitted using his position to sexually abuse underage girls. 125 victims made allegations against Nassar, and all 125 who reported being sexually assaulted will be allowed to give victim impact statements ahead of sentencing. Here is what Larry Nassar had to say in court yesterday.
For all those involved, and that I'm so horribly sorry that this was like a match to turn into a forest fire out of control. And I pray the rosary every day for forgiveness for their, I want them to heal. I want this community to heal. I have no animosity towards anyone. I just want healing. It's time.
You used that position of trust that you had in the most vile way to abuse children. I agree that now is a time of healing, but it may take them a lifetime of healing while you spend your lifetime behind bars.
That last voice we heard was Judge Rosemary Aquilina. Former gymnast Rachel Den Hollander was abused by Nassar when she was only 15. She says she and her teammates were silenced by various gymnastics authorities.
Today, I am grateful for the army of women that has stopped a pedophile. I am grateful that Larry Nassar has pled guilty to the sexual assault charges with women in Ingham County. Today, we heard the truth from Larry. He committed sexual penetration on his victims, and he is guilty of first-degree criminal assault. And I am grateful that truth has been known. But today I am also very grieved because we have yet to hear the truth from MSU and USAG and the USOC. Officials who kept Larry in power for decades. Officials who ignored repeated reports of sexual assault. Officials who brushed victims off as unable to tell the difference between a medical exam and sexual violation. For decades, MSU and USAG athletic trainers, supervisors, head coaches, and even psychologists received firsthand testimony of the sexual abuse perpetrated by Larry. Each and every time, MSU officials silenced these victims. And for decades, USAG's own policies on reporting sexual abuse created an atmosphere where predators, Larry Nassar, and hundreds of USAG coaches continued to prey on little girls, and the victims were silenced. Victims were told they were lucky to be seen by Larry. Victims were patronized and treated like uneducated females incapable of, quote, understanding the nuanced differences between medical treatment and sexual assault. Safeguards were never instituted or enforced. Good reporting practices were never followed. Instead, Larry continued to have access to little girls for decades. Today stands as a stark and painful reminder that while my predator has been stopped, the culture that allowed this predator to continue abusing has yet to end.
Brian Armand Graham is deputy sports editor of The Guardian US, and he joins us on the line now. Brian, listening to that from Rachel Den Hollander and reading the details of this case, it's a very grim story. We'll get into the wider issues for US gymnastics and for Olympic sports in America. But just on Larry Nassar, how important a figure was he within US gymnastics?
Well, you know, he'd worked with the team over a long period of time, over 3 decades, was the primary physician at 4 Olympic Games. And really, this is a period where U.S. gymnastics was very much sort of an afterthought on the international scene for many years. But over the time Nassar was with the team under Bella and Marta Caroli, you know, they've really sort of emerged as this international sort of force, sort of the dominant power in the new world order of gymnastics. And he's really been an integral part of that. I mean, he was on the floor. He was in the red, white, and blue uniform. He was front and center and very much a part of this. So, you know, he was as visible a figure as it gets.
It was said to the gymnast, if you wanted to succeed in the sport, he was the doctor you had to see. He was the guy you wanted to deal with. He had such a strong reputation. What was that based on?
Experience, I believe, in the trust placed in him in the program. You know, I'm not, you know, you're not trying to put too much, you're not trying to speculate too much about who put that trust in him at this point. But obviously, he was just a part of the program that was a very successful program. And, you know, it's sort of like if it ain't, there was, you know, if it's not broke, you don't fix it.
Yeah. So he was a very powerful figure within U.S. gymnastics.
Yeah, certainly.
The accusations then, when did they first start to come to light?
According to the court documents, the first one came to light in 1997 at Michigan State, so not involved with USA Gymnastics. And there had been other ones over the years. And I think what's sort of happening next, I mean, obviously, first and foremost, he's going away for life. He was seven counts that are going to be at least 25 years each. So he's gone for life. But I think now, sort of as mentioned in that statement, sort of the culpability where that ends is going to be looked at next. Michigan State, the one case that people keep sort of comparing this to is the Penn State football scandal with the child molestation with Jerry Sandusky. And in that case, school officials were found culpable. I mean, three of them were convicted in school, including the school president. So far, Michigan State has sort of avoided any sort of culpability in this, and I think that's going to be where we turn to next.
The allegations that have come through, over 125 allegations against Larry Nassar, are they a mix of athletes that he worked with at U.S. Gymnastics and Michigan State?
They are, yes. As often happens with these sort of serial cases, the calling cards were pretty much all the same. He basically did it under the guise of treatment. It was a lot of digital penetration, checking for this one ailment that involved him actually penetrating the athlete. Very often these were preteen or teenage gymnasts, and it was it's finally sort of all coming to light.
Yeah, like so many abusers in these situations, the brazenness, the arrogance, the confidence in their ability to get away with it is quite remarkable. Hearing stories that quite often the parents of the girl were actually in the doctor's surgery when it happened, that he would move into a position and he would lift the robe or he'd lift the sheet on the bed in a certain position so they wouldn't understand what was going on. And it seems as though it went on all around the world as well. I was reading Jamie Dancer, who was a member of the bronze medal winning team back in 2000, saying that she had been abused at the National Training Center in Texas, in California, meets all over the world, even abused in her own hotel room at the Olympics in Sydney. Nowhere was off limits.
Yeah, well, I think, you don't want to spread the blame too directly when it comes to this, the national team training camps run by Bella and Marta Caroli. But Jamie and in an interview with her co-plaintiffs, Jessica Howard and Jeanette Antolin, did sort of allege a sort of emotionally abusive environment, I believe were their words, at these ranches. So it created a climate where this could happen because, just especially for athletes under the spotlight at such a young age, it creates a place where they feel vulnerable and maybe they look to somebody, a trusted figure, for comfort. You see this consistent in scandals in sports, out of sports, along these lines. And it's really too bad that this was sort of the cost of the success that the team had.
The accusations, you say, were going back over 20 years now, right the way back to Michigan State. I think Larissa Boyce was one of the first to make accusations. And when she went to officials, when she went to the head gymnastics coach, Katy Klage, I think her name was, she was basically pushed off. She was told there was nothing here. They went in and asked the rest of the gymnasts. I think one of them may have stood up and said, yeah, there's something in this. But somehow it was all moved on. Nothing was ever said. And it seems that has gone on for two decades now. Even listening to Steve Penny, who's the former CEO of the gymnastics organization in the USA, saying that there's no duty to report it. There's actually no legal obligation to report this. So quite often, that's why they didn't.
Yeah, and to think that was the policy of USA Gymnastics is insane. Steve Penny has since resigned in the wake of the big Indianapolis Star investigation into this. USA Gymnastics has been under fire for its sort of mishandling of sexual abuse cases, the failure to report these things to authorities. USA Gymnastics, you have to remember, sort of, it basically has, I think it's around 3,500 clubs around the United States that they sort of endorse and give membership to. And, you know, now up until now, there hasn't been mandatory reporting of suspicions of sexual abuse. I know one of the main overhauls, they had an independent review overseen by a former federal prosecutor. And one of the new reforms is going to be sort of this mandatory reporting. I think she recommended 70 different reforms, but this is sort of the big top line headline one. But the fact that that wasn't in place beforehand is shameful. Mm.
When you have a case like this that runs for so long, the question that immediately arises is who knew what? And it does seem as though there were plenty of red flags along the way about Larry Nassar. Have there been indications of a wholesale cover-up within U.S. gymnastics?
Nothing that's come to light yet. Nothing that has really sort of been in a position where anybody can prove yet. I mean, As of now, what I know of, no. Not now, but I do believe that they're going to be looking into this specifically with respect to what people knew at Michigan State and when.
Yeah, it does seem as though he was able to live his life on the assumption that he wouldn't be caught, considering the length that this went on for. And even as we've seen in the past week, this was as recent as London 2012. People think of the Fierce Five, the artistic gymnastics team that won gold at London 2012. Three of that team already have come forward to say that they were abused by Nassar.
Yes, and this is a lot of it has happened really. I mean, the three members of that team, Michaela Maroney, Ali Raisman, and Gabby Douglas, have all made that sort of have made that revelation sort of in the weeks since this sort of watershed moment in America, which is this Harvey Weinstein scandal, which is obviously completely unrelated to this. But in the sense that, I mean, Michaela Maroney, who was the first of those three to make those things, actually sort of made it made the public sort of announcement in this sort of hashtag, this Me Too movement, which is really encouraging victims of sexual abuse and misconduct to come forward in a show of solidarity. Obviously those two things are sort of unrelated in a sort of in a legal standpoint, but it's interesting that it has sort of been swept up in this sort of watershed moment in America.
We're talking about sexual abuse here, but you mentioned earlier the entire culture within U.S. gymnastics, and it wouldn't be alone within elite sport in this, of having a culture where you pretty much have to put up with whatever roadblock is put in front of you, that raising any concerns was a weakness. And I was reading an article, it was from the New York Times earlier this year, Jennifer Say, who's a former national champion in U.S. gymnastics, and she was writing that women's gymnastics is a sport where the athletes are very young and barely clothed. Many of the coaches are male. It's a sport in which screaming insults at children is considered an accepted motivational technique, in which competing with severe injuries is the norm, in which discouraging athletes from eating is common practice, and which abuse, broadly defined, is standard. When those kind of quotes are put to people in U.S. gymnastics, do they still ring home now?
You know, I think, you know, that quote, there's a lot of hard truths in that quote. And, you know, unfortunately, it really does feel like a lot of what's described in that is very intrinsic to this sport at the elite level. You know, a lot of what you just described is probably never going to be able to be removed. The truth is, it really does engender abuse behavior along the lines of a Larry Nassar, which means this sport really should be policed and overseen probably twice or three times as much as other sports, because there is so much to this sort of the intrinsic state of this sport that really does sort of engender this type of abuse.
It's not difficult to see why these young girls, these young athletes would find it so difficult to speak up. You mentioned there the ranch. I don't know if there's just one ranch. The ranch is essentially the gymnastics national team training center in Texas. It seems like it's quite a strange environment for any teenager to, I don't know, do they grow up there? You might tell us a little bit about it. What sort of age the athletes enter, what they go through while they're there?
Well, basically, the sort of general, I mean, the short version is this. You know, when the Carollis came over to the United States to oversee the USA Gymnastics, they sort of created this unique system, which is sort of centralized and decentralized. It's sort of some of the sort of traditional Eastern Bloc system where athletes would live in one place centralized year-round. And in sort of in America, traditionally, elite gymnasts would work sort of specifically with their coaches in their towns. And basically, they combine these two systems to a system where a gymnast would work with their individual coach in their hometown, wherever they lived, for most of the year. And then I think once a month or once every 2 months would come down to this sort of system to all work together as a team. So it was sort of a mix of this central and decentralized system. But obviously that involves a lot of time at this sort of ranch in Texas.
What age are the girls who were there?
And usually senior level and just junior level, so from 13 on.
Right.
Yeah, and so there was, and when you look at when a lot of these, a lot of the accusers described their first contact with Nassar, it was 13 years old. I mean, Michaela Maroney said it was 13, and Allie Raisman said it was 13, I believe. Most of them said it was 13 and above.
Yeah, I'm reading some of the details that it's in a relatively remote location, that there's little or no phone coverage, that obviously they're leaving their parents for the weekend, that they do find themselves very isolated when they go into these training camps. Who then looks at what happens in that Corelli Ranch? Who do they answer to?
Well, I believe it would be a federal case at this point, and it would be a federal prosecutor that would have to be appointed to look into this. I believe it sort of supersedes the Texas state jurisdiction, and I would imagine that would be next. Obviously, this isn't really leaving the headlines at this point, and I think there's going to be a lot of pressure for there to be a federal prosecutor appointed to find some accountability.
You mentioned Penn State. This is at a younger level. I'm just wondering, America as a whole, then, how they approach child safety when it comes to sport. Is there any vetting procedure at all?
Well, I think often one of the sad sort of consequences of these cases is that we find that the vetting process that was in place really was based on sort of trust and misplaced trust very often. I mean, I guess, you know, in the case of Penn State, which was obviously one of the towering sort of programs in American college football, when you're chosen to, you know, to be involved in a camp that spends time on the Penn State campus, which is sort of hallowed ground, particularly in that part of the country, you know, the last thing you think is something like this is going to happen. You place trust in these figures. I mean, Joe Paterno himself was very much like a very grandfatherly figure in the sort of American culture, certainly in Pennsylvania culture. And who could imagine that one of his right or left-hand lieutenants would be capable of something like that, you know, and you don't think that's possible until, you know, you're on the wrong side of it.
The USAG's handling of this, it was subject to an independent review. A former federal prosecutor, Deborah Daniels, looked at this earlier in the year and she outlined some recommendations. I think Deborah Daniels said that this wasn't really looking back. It was more forward looking as to what they can do in the future. But even the recommendations that she made open up so many possibility and so many questions, and like, comparable to Penn State, but also very much comparable to the scandal in the Catholic Church, whereby it seems a lot of coaches, if accusations were made, would just simply move on to another gym, would just move to a town down the road and would be able to continue working, that there was no public notification of accusations, that there was, it was all very much kept in secret. She spoke about the problems with the grievance procedures, that essentially if you were abused, if you wanted to make a complaint, you had to go to your coach who was in charge of selection. So why would you go? Because you wouldn't want to be dropped off your team. The list of recommendations, the 50-60 recommendations, are they being implemented?
So far, I've heard that the mandatory reporting, which is sort of the big top line one, has been implemented under the new CEO, Carrie Perry, who actually just started 2 or 3 weeks ago. But that's the first thing that's going to go in. However, what you mentioned, that the ability of coaches to just go to another gym out of state, you know, that really is the key to this thing, because it does have parallels to the Catholic Church. And I think it sounds nice on paper, quote unquote, mandatory reporting, but the actual implementation of this is the key. And so far, we haven't heard many details about how it's actually going to be put into practice.
Larry Nassar is understandably and rightly the full focus of this now, and also when you look at the profile of the gymnasts he abused, that's going to be the case. But is this a far greater systemic problem within gymnastics in America? Is a lot more going to come out?
Well, like you said, or like, you know, we've both said, it really does sort of, it is a sport that sort of engenders itself to problems like this. And obviously, who knew what and when has to be sort of the next target. I mean, I don't think the culpability should end with Larry Nassar without a hard look at everything that led to this. I'm not sure whether that involves additional lawsuits from the accused. However, I think that should happen independently, whether it's a federal investigation. I mean, we've seen this all the time when there's public pressure enough on a moment or something in society. Things can be started up by the government, and I think this is worthy of that, certainly. You know, you can't take the good, what these athletes have brought to the country and on such a public level, and not protect them. Because to me, it just amounts to the erasure of young women.
Is there any sort of a greater conversation happening in America around this about the expectations that are put on young elite athletes, what they're put through at a very young age, what they're expected to just take on board? And I'm not even talking about the sexual abuse side. I'm talking more about, as what you were saying was just sort of part of gymnastics, that what coaches were allowed to get away with, what the athletes themselves almost expected.
To be honest, this is a story that is only really now getting the national traction. I've been shocked over the past year. As somebody that follows this stuff closely, I've been truly shocked at how little attention it's been getting. You know, just basically since the first since Larry Nassar was first arrested for the child pornography charges last year, which preceded the actual abuse charges. So I do believe that over the course of this, it really is going to start a conversation along those lines.
Brian, thanks a lot for taking the call.
Thank you very much.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.